Welcome to LOA Today. Walt Thiessen and life coach David Bartke here. It is Thursday, August 24th, 2017, and we are off and running on our exploration of our next book in our series of dramatic or non-dramatic literatures that we read. Some of them are dramatic because, as far as I'm concerned, they're all dramatic. They talk about the law of attraction. That alone is dramatic. But this one's Asking It Is Given by Abraham Hicks. We did the introduction last week. We kind of dipped our little toe in chapter one, but we really didn't get very far with it. So, David, I'm looking forward to really diving into chapter one this week.
Me too, because it's such wonderful information that anyone who's listening is going to really enjoy the information, and it'll give them a lot to think about.
Plus, it gives us stuff to think about, stories to tell, all kinds of fun things to do with it. That's what's so cool about the show that we do, because it gives the opportunity to just explore whatever direction we want to explore. That's the fun part.
Yes, and I'd love to tell something which I think everybody would appreciate, because it's very law of attraction oriented.
Okay.
And that is... I don't know if you even know this, but I'm also a songwriter.
I did not know that.
Yeah, and at one point in my life, which I call my other life, I was actually a professional songwriter. And I had some songs recorded and used in different types of media and all that kind of thing.
Wow.
And
anything we might recognize?
Yeah, and then probably, well, some of my biggest thing was with someone who is very well known in like Europe.
Okay.
This lady named Jennifer Rush several years ago, and that did really well. Then they used that song in some movies, and then another song, like various, movies and TV spots and such. But then after a while, I changed direction with my life. But once you're a songwriter or anything creative, it's just part of you, so you don't really stop doing it, even
right,
if you change focus. And so lately I've been writing again and pitching my songs, but it's been so long that at first I did have some like fear, doubt, and worry, like pretty much everyone who I had contact with when I was doing it before. Nobody was at the same place anymore. Some of them weren't even doing it anymore. So I kind of felt new. Like, I kind of felt like, oh, this feels like I'm a new writer again, because most of my connections aren't anymore.
Yeah, you lost your network. That's scary.
Yeah. Yeah, so I got into a little bit of the fear, worry, and doubt, the resistance. Like, well, I don't know, but, I still love doing it, and I'm still writing really great song, so
you basically had a challenge to see whether or not you could actually stick
in the right place about this.
Yeah.
So I started changing how I thought about it, doing some of the processes I know and getting myself into a better vibration about it. And I started pitching some of my songs, and even after not hearing from some of the people for a while, for about a minute, I started dipping back down, like, oh, well, maybe, I'm not good enough anymore, whatever. And I thought, David, readjust your thoughts. Readjust your thoughts. Come on now. You probably have had more success than a lot of people that are even doing this now. So just readjust your thoughts. So I did. And sure enough, this past Friday, on the same day, I heard back from two different music publishers, and they both want two different songs.
Like, very good.
One to one and one to another. Yeah, so it's just like kind of proof that you just have to refocus on what you want, even when for a minute you go back into the, oh my God, I don't know, is this going to work, is it not going to work? Because I reminded myself that we're always saying yes to everything we think about.
Yeah, that's a really key point, isn't it? That we're always saying yes to everything we think about. Just by thinking about it, we are saying yes.
Yeah, so I thought, okay, what am I want to say yes to my songs being used again. Either placed with an artist or used in some form of media. So I just reshifted my thoughts. And the good thing was I didn't really spend that much time in the fear, worry, and doubt about something happening. Because once I once I realized I was there, I immediately knew, like, okay, warning, warning, I better shift out of this into what I want.
Danger, Will Robinson, danger.
That's right. So there's just, like, some more proof that at the law of attraction, if you know how to work with it, that it does work.
That is a good thing. And not only that it works, but that you were able to get yourself off of a bad habitual pattern you were developing, and you were able to do it pretty quickly, which is really cool.
Yes. Well, you know, thank God, because of what I do every day with the law of attraction coaching, you know,
it gives you a heads up, doesn't it?
Yeah, I use it on myself, of course, too. And then I realized, like, wait a minute, with this whole songwriting thing, I have to totally shift my vibration and focus on what I want about it. You know, I want my songs to be used. I want them to be used and placed with either an artist or used in a movie or a TV show or whatever, and get into that vibration about it and get excited about it and that whole thing. And I just thought it was interesting that I heard from both people on the same day.
Yeah, yeah. What do you attribute that to? Do you think that that was coincidental, or do you think there was actually something behind that?
Well, I don't know. I just think that the songs were really good, and I had a high vibration about the songs and myself as a songwriter again, and it just kind of clicked. And for whatever reason, on their end, they don't, you know, these are people that don't know each other.
Presumably,
they just kind of got heard at the same time, and they were both interested. So I was just like, yay.
That's terrific. That's really exciting. Yeah, that's happening for you. I hope it continues to grow.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. Well, of course, now that this has happened, it sparks even more high vibrations about it.
Sure, because it builds your confidence.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
When you build your confidence, you start to believe even more strongly than you believed before. You're kind of building
on
it.
Yeah, it does help. Yeah, it does help, for sure.
Sure.
Like, I'm right, I still know how to do it.
And as a segue into the book Ask and It Is Given, Chapter 1, there's a subhead that really touches on this. It says, you only hear what you are ready to hear. You made yourself ready to hear from those people.
Yes, yes.
You probably weren't ready to hear back when you were in the fear mode.
Probably not. I was probably blocking it.
And in fact, in the book, it says, we are talking to you at many levels of your awareness. That's the tricky thing about Abraham Hicks. Abraham does come at you a lot of different ways, and it's often hard to distinguish which direction they're coming from.
Yes.
But they do come from different levels of awareness. And continuing, it says, all at the same time, but you will only receive whatever you are now ready to receive. You were definitely ready to receive those calls.
Yes. Yes, I was.
Everyone will not get the same thing from this book, but every reading of this book will net you something more. This is a book that will be read many times by those who understand its power. I guess that's why I keep rereading it. It is a book that will help physical beings understand their relationship to God and to all that they really are. That's in all caps there. This is a book that will help you understand who you really are, who you have been, where you are going, and all that you continue to be. I like that last bit. This book will help you understand that you never, ever get it done. That's a really key point that Abraham repeats over and over.
I know, she always, Esther always says that you never get it done.
You never get it done. It will help you understand your relationship with your history and with your future. But most important, it will awaken within you your awareness of the potency of your powerful now. You will learn how you are the creator of your own experience and why all of your power is in your now. And ultimately, this book will lead you to an understanding of your emotional guidance system. That's the first time we hear that concept coming in. And to an understanding of your vibrational set point. Ah, they're bringing vibration again. So now they've actually labeled it. They still haven't really described it hardly at all. And they get into great depth as we go deeper into the book. But that emotional guidance system is... It's an interesting way to present the concept that you don't have to figure it all out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. No, we don't. I mean, we shouldn't try to, because then it could lead to resistance.
It can lead to resistance, but even more importantly, it's not like you have to figure it out. It's not like you have to
it's not all on your shoulders. All you really have, what the emotional guidance system really is just paying attention to what your own emotional state is and recognizing that if you're feeling in a positive state, you are in what they call a high vibrational level. And if you are in a negative emotional state, you are in a low vibrational level. So it's essentially a way of just measuring where you are, which is useful when you're first exposed to this. Because when you're first exposed, you say, what vibration? How am I supposed to know what my vibrational level is when I don't even know it myself?
No, it could sound challenging, but it really just means, how are you feeling?
Yes,
Are you feeling good or not and all that?
Because when you're feeling good, that's when the good stuff happens. When you're feeling bad, that's when the bad stuff happens. Interesting little story about that. I think I've mentioned my wife has a gardening business, which has actually been doing very well this year. The last 3 years, we've had nice increases in business every single year. And this year, I jumped in a large way, mainly because she was getting overwhelmed with the managing of it. And there weren't enough really good systems in place, if you know what I mean, to make sure there wasn't a lot of duplication of effort and a lot of wheel spinning and all that kind of thing. So I've jumped in to try to iron some of that stuff out. But nevertheless, it has been doing really well. And we got to the point where, our major goal between my wife and I has been to take as much of the workload off my wife as possible and to get it onto other people. Because when you start a business, I mean, you're probably aware of this yourself, David, because of your songwriting career. When you start a business, you wear all the hats. I mean, it's not like you have a whole bunch of people that you can just delegate work to. It doesn't work that way. It's you. Yeah. That's it. You know? So you learn to manage that way, and you learn to build it that way. And eventually, it comes to overwhelm you because you can't wear all the hats all the time and keep growing the business without literally killing yourself from stress. Well, that's where she was at, so that's why we've been trying to take as many of the hats away from her as we can. And give it into the right hands and have other people doing it so that she has less and less to do and less stress and can therefore feel better and better. Because she's also a law of attraction practitioner, too. She understands how important that is. So we need that vibrational positivity, that high vibrational level. Well, anyway, toward the goal of getting the hats taken away from her, we have recently hired a salesperson. First time ever that she's had somebody else doing sales for her. I was setting the salesperson up with an email account and going over a couple of things. We have some timekeeping software, scheduling software that I found that we're currently using as a sort of short-term solution. And it has done tremendous things in terms of reducing my wife's stress levels. So that alone made it worthwhile. Plus, we have an assistant manager named Donna who has taken a lot of – she tells us it has reduced her workload by 10 hours a week, which is significant. That's a lot.
Yes.
So it's been very, very good. But it also has its problems, and I've got to basically rewrite it in order to make it, you know, do what we want it to do. However, it's working right now, and so I was showing her how to use this because everybody uses it to record not just, you know, what their time is and when they start and when they stop and so forth, but what they did during the day. That's one of our key ways of being able to track, you know, what did you do today? What made it worthwhile to pay you your wage, you know? And in the process of doing that, she shared something very interesting. She's quite young. She's in her early 20s. And she said something that you don't often hear from a millennial. She said that she doesn't like new technology. Now, that's kind of unusual. You don't hear that too often.
That is. No.
It's actually a lot more common than we might realize. I've had the opportunity to talk to a number of millennials about various forms of technology. And it's actually a fairly common thing. We don't associate as being true because we, you know, especially the older generations, we see how easily they just absorb technology into their fingertips, so to speak. But that's not what they're really doing. What actually happens is when you're a kid, especially, and you're trying to learn a new technology, you're not doing it all by yourself. Your friends are doing it too. So, you know, one friend figures out one thing, another friend figures out a second thing, you figure out a third thing, another friend figures out a fourth thing, you share it among yourselves, and all of a sudden you guys are all experts. That's the way it works. That's the advantage to having a social network. No wonder social networking online is so popular. I'm serious. That's really one of the driving forces. Well, what happens when you, quote, grow up, unquote, go into the work world, and all of a sudden your network is taken away because you're not associating with them anymore. You're now out in the work world. Well, your network's just been taken away. It's like what happened with you when you left the songwriting business and came back. You found, like, wait a minute. that, you know, the basic thing that I really depended on in order to feel good about what I was doing was gone. And the same thing is true for her. So she didn't have that network to go to and say, you know, I can't figure out how to do this thing on my PC. How do I do it? And that made her feel vulnerable. Well, that's what she was expressing when she said she doesn't like new technologies. And I actually had given her the opportunity. We actually are not using Microsoft Outlook for reasons I won't even get into, other than to say I try to stay away from Microsoft as much as I can. But that's another debate. The point is we try not to do that. We use a program called Thunderbird instead, made by Mozilla. And she's used to Outlook. And so I said, well, I'll tell you what. I'll give you a choice. I'll help you set it up in Outlook. Because I can certainly do that. I have enough enough technical skill to pull it off. But here's the deal. If something goes wrong, I don't promise to support that. I'll support Thunderbird, but I won't support Outlook. Now, could I support Outlook? Yeah, I probably could. But I've dealt with Outlook enough, helping other people with it, that I just don't want to have anything to do with it. So that's why I put that limit in place. Anyway, her reaction was, well, okay, then I'll learn Thunderbird. I thought that was an interesting choice. She doesn't like new technologies. But it was worth it to her because she knew that she was going to get support from me in case something went wrong. And she didn't want to have to figure it out on her own if something went wrong. So she was willing to do it. And then there was also the timekeeping software that I mentioned. And that's also a new thing for her. She said she's found it really hard the first few days to remember to use the software. It actually gets installed on your smartphone. You know, to use the software to clock in and clock out every day. Because you don't actually walk into work and see a time clock. It's on your smartphone, right? So she found herself in a place where it was hard to remember to do that. And she said, I have a lot of doubt that I'm going to be able to do that. Well, my LOA antenna went up. And I said, well, if you believe that, you're going to be right.
Right.
But I'll give you a secret. Here's how you can make sure that you remember every time. You have to believe you're going to remember. And she gave me that quizzical look. I said, yeah, you really have to feel like you're going to remember it before you can actually remember it. If you believe it, if you feel it, if you have confidence, if you get excited about, you're going to be able to remember it, guess what? You're going to remember it. If you don't, if you doubt, if you start feeling, oh, I'll never do this, guess what? You won't.
Because whatever we say or think, we're saying yes to.
That's right. And I said, but no, I understand. This is kind of counterintuitive. This is not the way we normally think about things. We normally think that, you know, you experience something and then you feel something about it. Reversing the order is uncomfortable. And it's a hard thing. She nodded her head and said, that sounds really hard. And I said, trust me, it really can work. And if you're willing to do it, it will work. And then Louise was across the room. She chimed in, absolutely, it works. So between the two of us, we were giving her that message. But there's a common everyday example of how you can have one person who, even a young person, who is exposed to the concept for the first time that you have to think it and feel it before you can experience it. And it's a challenge. It's a real challenge. So this whole idea of an emotional guidance system, very valuable. It's very valuable because now you don't have to worry about, well, I have to understand all this stuff. I have to find some way to believe something I don't believe. You don't have to do that. All you really have to do is get yourself feeling good. Because when you feel good, it's easy to believe stuff. Doesn't matter how crazy it is. You can still believe it when you're feeling good.
That's true.
Isn't that true?
That's true,
I mean, I've noticed that with so many different things in life. Especially over the last 5 to 8 years or so, while I've been really studying this LOA thing in detail, you know, in my personal life. But all you have to do is feel better and things come easier. I'm not quite sure why that's true, but it's definitely, I've seen it to be 100% true. Have you?
Yeah, because when you believe in it and that's your intention, it just, you're already putting yourself ahead of the game. Because it just makes it feel easier.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not what we're taught. It's not what our culture teaches us. It's not what society teaches us, but it's still true.
Yeah.
Now, chapter one, interestingly enough, is a relatively short chapter. It's actually only 1, 2, 3 pages and a blank page.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that something? It's only 3 pages, which is not, don't expect this is the way the rest of the book is going to be, folks. This is not the way the rest of the book is. But it's understandable because they're presenting this really, you know, challenging topic. This whole idea that you only hear what you are ready to hear. You only experience what you are ready to experience. You only attract what you are ready to attract. And the measuring stick, if you will, that indicates whether you're going to be ready to hear it, to see it, to attract it, whatever it is how you're feeling.
Yes.
So an emotional guidance system, it isn't just a guidance system, it's also a navigation system. If you think about it. A guidance system is kind of like, you know, I've got a leader, I'm going to follow the leader. But a navigation system is where you're driving.
Yeah, it lets you know if you're heading in the right direction, and the same with your emotional guidance system.
That's
if
right.
you're feeling good in a high vibration, then you know you're going in the right direction vibrationally.
I like the way Mike Dooley expresses it. He says that it isn't good enough to just have the emotional guidance system. It's like getting in your car and you've got Mike Dooley playing on the radio, or you're listening to The Secret, or you got your vision boards in the back seat. You know, you're all hyped up for the trip, and you know, you got yourself strapped in, and you got your snacks over on the side seat. But nothing's going to happen unless you put the car in gear.
Yeah.
It's not enough to just feel good, to just stop there. You actually have to do stuff, you know? So it isn't just having a guidance system. It's also doing the driving. It's taking the steps. Mike Dooley has a great way of expressing it. You want to take baby steps. The reason you take baby steps is because you don't need to worry about taking large steps. You don't need to worry about having to figure out how to do the whole trip. You only have to take the first few steps. And the guidance system tells you whether or not you're going in the right direction or not.
Yes.
Because if you're going in the wrong direction, you feel miserable.
Yeah, and taking a first baby step, and then another one, and without being concerned of how you're going to get there. Because once you start getting into how is something going to happen, then you're kind of bringing yourself back down.
That's what Mike calls the horrible house.
Yes,
good phrase.
Right.
I like that one.
Yes.
But yeah.
The horrible house.
Yeah, because you don't want to be stuck in the horrible. Well, the horrible house truly are horrible.
Yeah, because it just brings you down, and most of the time we don't know how something's going to happen. It just kind of screws us up to get caught up in that.
And you get caught in an infinite loop, really. Trying,
yeah.
You try to figure something out, and you get one little piece of the answer, and then you try to figure out what that means. And then you get a little piece of that answer, and then you try to figure out what that means. And then you get a little
Again,
piece of the
more
answer.
More proof that what we focus on is what we keep attracting. So if we keep focusing on how, then you keep thinking of more, well, maybe it'll happen like this. Oh, well, I don't know, maybe it'll happen like that. Whereas if we just trust that it is going to happen, it's so much better.
It's better because if you're trying to predetermine how it's going to happen, you're actually limiting your horizons.
Yes. Yeah, like I said, we don't know how something's going to happen. It could happen in so many different ways, in some ways we may not even think of.
That's the part that's really weird. That took me a while to really grasp. And I think it took me a while because it took me a while to actually experience it and recognize what I was experiencing.
Yeah.
I think the first time that I really noticed it was in January 2014. And you may wonder why I remember that particular month of the year. Well, that's because that's when, after 11 years in Virginia, my wife and I moved back to Connecticut, where we had originally come from.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a traumatic move for a number of reasons. I've told parts of the story before, but I just want to tell one piece of it. Because on moving day, as so often happens, the moving truck showed up and we weren't done packing. So that was a little traumatic all by itself. And we're trying to pack while they're loading everything in. Well, a number of things went wrong, including the fact that the van wasn't big enough to handle all of our stuff. So we had to select some stuff to leave behind because we couldn't afford a larger van. And that was traumatic. We'd also arranged with the mover that they were going to drag my wife's pickup truck behind it on the way back. because it was actually an older pickup truck. We weren't really confident we'd make the whole trip, but we knew it was a good around town vehicle. So we figured if they could drag it to Connecticut for us, now we had an around town vehicle until we can get other stuff going. Because I had already gotten rid of my car, which had basically died a few days before. So we were like one old pickup truck away from being vehicle-less. Well, on the day of the move, the head moving guy comes over and says, "Oh, by the way, I see a note on here that we're going to be dragging your truck, except that we're not." I said, "What?" And he said, "No, by law, we're not allowed to do that." Uh-huh.
Mm.
Now what are we going to do? It's moving day. What are we going to do with the pickup truck? Because we know, Louise and I are confident, it has like a 50-50 chance of making it to Connecticut and a 50-50 chance it's going to die on the way. You know, so what are you going to do with it? Well, it turns out one of the guys in the moving crew wanted to buy it.
Oh.
Like, okay. Now, this is a truck that, I mean, it had a lot of miles on it. It had a lot of miles. I don't remember exactly. I would say probably 130,000, 140,000 miles.
Wow. And that's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. And, you know, I would have been happy to get, like, $900, $1,000 for it. So I said, "Well, how much you offer me for it?" He said, "Well, how about $1,500?
Wow, very good.
Now, that was out of the clear blue nothing. Like, where the heck did that come from? there's a small example of what we're talking about. I had no plan to even get rid of the truck.
Yeah.
I'm forced into getting rid of the truck, and all of a sudden, out of the clear blue sky, I get an offer for more than what I had wanted in the first place.
That is great. Law of attraction.
You know, so there's a great example of how if you just let the universe do it its way, it comes out better than what you anticipated.
Yes.
Now, the story actually gets better because after they moved us to Connecticut, of course, the guy had bought the pickup truck from us. I had gotten rid of my car, which had actually died. That's a story all by itself. I had an old Camry that I was selling, and guy came by to look at it, and when he looked at it, he checked the oil and found that the oil was dry.
Oh, God.
I'm pretty sure it had a cracked engine. I just didn't know it.
Wow.
Now, I don't know about you, but if I go to look at a car and I find out that it's been drained of oil, the last thing I want to do is buy the thing. The guy offered me $500.
Oh, that's good. Like, you'll take it.
Okay, sure. Give me the money. It's yours. You want help hooking up to your trailer? So he ended up buying the car. So when we got to Connecticut, we didn't have a vehicle. The way we got to, we actually rented a car to drive from Virginia to Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how expensive rental cars are. You don't want to hang on to them for real long.
No.
But without it, we had no vehicle.
Yeah.
So the day after our move, boxes are still all over the house. Nothing's actually, you know, unpacked or anything like that. We're off looking, you know, we're car shopping. And to make matters even worse, the move had basically wiped our savings out. So we had no money.
Oh.
This is a fun move, let me tell you. So, you know, here we are. We're driving into a dealership, and I'm trying to think, okay, well, what kind of dealership do I want to go to in order to try to find a car that I can get for, like, you know, $1,000 or something? As little as possible. And, you know, we were Toyota fans. So we went to a Toyota dealership, but I said to myself, there's no way. They don't even keep cars that old there. You know, if they have any used cars at all, there are probably four or five of them. They're all, like, 2 or 3 years old. You know, they're all in like, you know, the $15,000 to $20,000 range, that kind of thing. There's no way I can afford any of this thing. So literally, my wife and I went in with no expectation at all that we could get a car. It was just like, you know, throw a dart and just hope it hits a dartboard, you know?
Yeah.
That's really what happened. Would you believe we drove out that day with two brand new cars?
I would believe it.
You would?
Yes.
Well, I wouldn't have believed it. I could tell you that. We drove out with two brand new cars. To this day, I'm astonished by how that happened. But literally, it was January. We walked into a dealership in the middle of a promotion. Of course, they're having promotions all the time. But this was a pretty serious promotion because their sales were down. Their sales were down dramatically. They were desperate for customers.
Wow.
And, you know, so they, my car generally is a Camry. So I was looking at a Camry. My wife was looking at a Corolla. And I got into to their brand new Camry, which was a 2014 Camry at that point.
Right.
And actually, 2014 and a half. Did you know that cars now have half years?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's not just like a like this year there's a 2017, but there's also a 2017 and a half. Next year there's a 2018 and a 2018 and a half.
I had no idea about the half.
I didn't know that either. Well, this is a 2014 and a half.
Okay.
Which makes sense because the car dealer year actually begins in September of the previous year. So they'd already sold the 2014s. Now they were selling the 2014 and a half. But anyway, sales were down. We were actually talking to their best salesperson. This is the guy who won their sales contest for like 14 months in a row.
Wow.
And his sales were off 50%.
Huh.
So they were hurting. And they quoted us what it would take. They said, well, first of all, here's what it would cost to buy it. We couldn't afford to buy just one car, let alone two. I mean, the price was so high. The monthly cost was so high. We were just like, we can't afford it. There's no way we can do this. We need two cars. They said, well, how about a lease? Would you be willing to do a lease? I said, well, I mean, beggars can't be choosers, you know? Sure, let's look at a lease. Why not? Because leases are cheaper, you know? So they came back with prices for leases. And we looked at it, we said, we can't afford that. That's crazy. You don't seem to understand. We're broke. We got nothing. We can't afford this. And they said, don't go away. Don't go away. We're going to figure this out. So we sat there and waited for them to figure stuff out. And they kept sharpening their pencils and sharpening their pencils. You know what they did, David? They actually ended up getting the lease price of the Camry down to below their cost.
Yeah.
And even at that, we were really pushing our budget. I mean, because we needed two cars. And that, you know, that basically ate up almost everything we had for just one car. And so we were looking at, well, maybe we can swing that. And they had a used Corolla that we weren't real happy with. But we were trying to justify, well, can we afford, you know, that plus the cost of the Camry? Maybe we can swing this somehow. You know, because, I mean, the employment picture wasn't good. You know, I mean, everything was really negative, but we needed to do something, and it was obvious these guys were just bending over backwards trying to make this happen. So we're looking at it, and my wife says, I just don't really want that Corolla. I don't like it. It just doesn't feel right. And besides that, I have a headache, so I'm going to take the rental car, and I'm going to go home, and I'm going to go lie down. I said, okay. She says, what do you want to do about the Camry? I said, I guess we better take it because we need a car.
Yeah.
And this is an incredible deal. I mean, what they're offering us here, you're never going to get again. So we agreed, okay, I'll lease the Camry. So I'm sitting down and filling out the paperwork and so forth, and she's driving home. She gets about two blocks away, and the sales manager comes over and says, where's your wife? And I said, well, you know, I explained, the Corolla just really isn't right. It's just not working. And, you know, we'll go with the Camry. He says, call her back. I said, what do you mean? She says, you got her cell phone number, right? I said, yeah. We'll call her and tell her to come back. Why? Because we're going to give her a brand new Corolla for the same price as that used Corolla. What? Are you crazy? No, no, no. We really want to have you guys as long-term customers. Okay. So I called her back. I said, Louise, you got to come back to the dealership. She says, why? I'm tired. I got a headache. Because they're going to give us the new Corolla for the same price that they want us to pay for the old Corolla. What?
So she went back.
And we drove out that day into a growing snowstorm with two brand new cars.
Wow, very nice.
Now neither of those stories.
You didn't know how that was going to happen. You had no idea.
The Camry, I there's no way I could have planned that one.
No.
Well, actually, I could have. If I had checked the oil just before I put the ad in, maybe I could have caught that one. The Ford, the Ranger truck that we got rid of, that one, I mean, I already had another plan in place. There's no way I could anticipate that one. And then we get to Connecticut, and we have no cars and no money. And we drive away with two brand new cars. Like, what? WTF? What is going on here? There's no way I could have planned that. A Hollywood script writer could not write that story.
Yeah.
That's just too fanciful. If someone were to actually put out a movie that displayed that story, nobody would go. They wouldn't believe it.
Yeah, but that's because you didn't get caught up in how any of it was going to happen.
No, we thought we just threw our hands up and said, hey, universe, we have no idea what to do here. Fix this for us.
I mean, I have just a short, similar story about a car where I wanted this luxury car, and it was over what I could pay per month. And I just said, look, this is what I could do, X amount per month, whatever. I know it's impossible, but that's it. And he goes, okay. So I left, and literally like 4 days later, I get a call, and he said, well, if you don't mind having a very, very, very slightly used one, it had like maybe 1,000 miles on it. That was it.
Wow.
He goes, we can meet all your terms.
Wow.
I'm like, I'll be there today.
With bells on.
Yeah, and of course it was, you know, practically brand new. So it had 1,000 miles on it because they were kind of using it when people needed a loaner car.
Yeah.
And then somehow he talked to whoever and they said, okay, well, let's just let him get this one in and we'll meet his terms. It was like, it was the most ridiculous thing because it was still that car. It was just very, very slightly used. I'm like, I'll take it. I didn't know how he did it, but I just put out there what I wanted and it happened.
And it's not like car dealers never do this. Of course, they'll try to bend over backwards whenever they can to make a sale. They don't always have the means to do it, though. And they aren't always in a situation like this particular dealership that my wife and I went to was in, where they were in desperate need for sales. They were in really bad shape of meeting their monthly quota.
You went in on the right day.
Yeah. I mean, so even a dealership that wants to work with you, they can't predict in advance that their month's going to be bad, you know?
Yes.
They can't play. Oh, we're going to have a bad month in January, so we're going to really go after it and be aggressive. Yeah,
yeah. That's why one of the processes I use with my clients is, I don't know how this is going to happen, but I want, and then blank line, and you put in whatever you want, because it lets you think about something you want in a very low resistant way, and it reminds us that, oh, that's right, we don't know how something's going to happen, but we just have to put out what we want.
That's what this whole concept of vibration is that Abraham Hicks talks about.
Yeah.
Because when you're putting out what you want, what you're really doing is, in their words, putting out a vibration, a vibrational frequency, and anything that matches that frequency, ideally the thing that you want, is what will tend to be attracted to. In fact, they even write it in the second paragraph of this chapter one. It says, in this non-physical realm, we do not use words, for we do not require language. We also do not have tongues with which to speak or ears with which to hear, although we do communicate perfectly with one another. Our non-physical language is one of vibration, and our non-physical communities or families are those of intention. In other words, we radiate that which we are vibrationally, and others of like intent assemble. Remember, we talked about that phrase last week.
I was going to say, if anyone's listening who didn't listen to last week's, we're talking about what Esther Hicks calls Abraham, and that's who she's channeling, and she's talking about how they are.
Yeah, so good point, because we did go into that last week, but if you didn't happen to catch last week's episode, this whole episode sounds a little weird.
Yeah, so. If someone just heard that without knowing where we're coming from, they'd be like, huh?
Yeah, right. I think we can confirm it is a little weird. But it's worth it.
Yes.
It's really worth it, because there's so much good stuff that comes out of this. So even if you have to put the weirdness aside and say, look, I'm just going to pretend that's not there, that's fine. No problem at all.
Yeah.
But that whole concept of vibration, that idea that what you radiate is what you tend to get back, when you get it explained to you the way they did here in this chapter, in this paragraph, it kind of makes some sense now, because now you're realizing that non-physical entities, people who aren't actually here on Earth as people, but who are just spirit, that they still attract stuff, and they do it vibrationally. So, of course, they're going to, if you're going to get a communication from the other side, they're going to explain things the way they understand it, right? That's based on what their experience is going to be. So that's where this whole concept of vibration comes from. It's still a little bit strange for us, I think. I mean, I don't know about you, but for me, the whole idea of vibration, it's a little bit hard to sink your teeth into at first.
Yeah, but to make it easy, which worked for me, was I just go by what the emotional guidance system is they were talking about. If something feels good to me, I just take that. I'm in a high vibration about it. If I don't feel good for some reason or something doesn't feel good to me, then that means I'm in a low vibration. Like, I do it very simply with myself, and that seems to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you also have to get around the whole concept of vibration, though, is what my point is. I mean, yes,
yeah.
your approach is terrific. That's the way to do it. But
yeah.
I know for me, I'll still stumble over the word vibration. Like, vibration? What is vibration? What's vibrating?
That's because you have that scientific mind, and you want to know why.
I do. I do. I've been that way.
I'm more like, okay, that makes sense.
You accept so much easier.
I just accept it.
Which is very good. That's a good trait to have.
Yeah. But a lot of people are like you, where they want to figure out the details of why and how.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, no, that makes sense to me. Okay, let's move on.
Yeah. Well, I do want to know. So I guess the way that I handled this whole concept of vibration was, first of all, I just dismissed it. I said, I don't understand the whole vibration part, so I'm going to ignore that part. I'll just do the part. I get the part about, you know, emotional guidance system and paying attention to, you know, what you're feeling, which they actually don't describe very much in this chapter. They're just kind of laying the foundation right now. But you get into it later on in the book, and you start to get a feeling for you get a feeling for how important feeling is.
Yeah. Yes.
So, yes.
A lot of people aren't used to thinking that. Like, when I work with a lot of people, it takes some people a little bit of time to connect to how they do feel about something, because they're just not used to thinking about it in that way.
Oh, yeah. If you had asked me back when I first got exposed to this stuff what I felt about a number of things in my life, my reaction would have been, well, I don't really feel anything about that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a whole lot that I do feel about. You know, if I experience something, you know, it's an emotional trauma or something like that, then I feel. But,
right.
You know, how do I feel about a door? Well, it's a door.
Well, it's not always about a door, but about a particular thing. But you know what? Typically, men in general, it is true, I hate to say it, but it's true, have a little bit of a harder time connecting feelings to what's going on.
Well, we're trained not to. Especially the older ones among us. I mean, younger generations are actually a little bit better off because the older generations were the ones who were kind of insisting on breaking the old mold. But so younger generations of men are a lot better at being in touch with their feelings than in the past. But when you come from, you know, the experience that us older ones had, and indeed what our parents had and our grandparents had, it was culturally built in to mask your feelings as a male. In fact, showing your feelings was actually it was actually a sign of weakness.
Yeah.
If you're demonstrating emotion, you're a little girl.
Yeah.
that was the message, right?
Horrible, I know.
Yeah, terrible message. So I think it takes a lot of generations to wipe that kind of craziness out, and we're in the process of doing that. So that's the encouraging thing. But it hasn't completely disappeared, and it still, you know, rears its ugly head in many ways in society. One of the ways that we see it a lot is in video games.
Mm-hmm.
Who plays video games? Both men and women play video games, but a lot more men do. And what are most video games about?
That's probably true.
And what are most...
Violence.
Yeah.
They're all violent. Yeah.
Yeah. What's the most popular sport in America? Football.
Yeah.
What's football about? Violence. Strong, powerful emotions.
Yeah.
If you look at it closely and you notice it over and over again, what you start realizing is that men feel most confident about expressing emotion when it's powerful emotion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when it's manly stuff, you know.
Oh, God.
Taking out a linebacker, you know, that's a good time to feel emotion, right?
Yeah, but no, it's true. A lot of times I said to a client who's a man, I said, well, how does that make you feel? And it sometimes they're just like, well, I don't know. But so I kind of have to, like, coach them and start to how to feel something.
Yeah.
just in a very basic way at first.
Well, I had to actually make a list of positive and negative emotions just so I could kind of go through the list and say to myself, well, how does that feel? How does that feel?
Mm-hmm.
How does that feel?
Mm-hmm.
And in the process of doing that, realized that I actually had some of them mixed up. I had some that were positive emotions that I had in the negative category and vice versa.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
And one of the really challenging things was trying to figure out what neutral was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Have you had to deal with that one much with your clients?
Sometimes, yeah. Then we have to work on how to get it out of the neutral zone into the more raised zone.
For me, it isn't just that. It's also understanding what the nature of neutral is. Because I thought of neutral as if it were neither negatively charged nor positively charged. But actually, neutral is a form of negative. I didn't realize that.
I was just going to say, that's more of a low vibration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I didn't think of it that way. I thought of neutral as like, you know, the car is in neutral. Well, it's not going anywhere.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, but I like the car analogy, like you just said, because with that thing about not knowing how, like when we drive to the market, we don't think, well, am I going to get there? I don't know. We don't get halfway to the market and then turn around because we're not there yet. The same is kind of true with when there's something you want to manifest. It's like just because it hasn't happened yet, it doesn't mean you think, okay, well, that's it then. It's like you have to keep that 100% certainty.
It's sort of like a parable about belief. If you are willing to believe, then you'll get there. If you are going to start doubting and start believing in your doubt, you won't get there because you'll find a reason to stop the car.
Yeah, but I love that because it's true. Like when we go to drive somewhere, there's like 100% certainty we're going to get there. Like we don't even question it.
Well,
like,
maybe not with the Ford Ranger truck. Because the truck was likely 50% likely to die on the way to Connecticut. So we might not have gotten there.
Stop it. you're confusing people. No, but seriously, overall, when you get in your car to drive somewhere, you're just so certain you're going to get there. There's never a question of, oh, am I going to make it? And that's kind of how we have to be with things that we want to manifest.
Yes. Yeah. The story there is we have a tendency to say we want something and then immediately in the back of our minds start coming up with all the reasons why it's not likely to happen.
That can happen.
I think it's actually a lot more common than people realize. Sometimes we'll tend to think, well, it's just me. I don't think it's just you. I think everybody does it. I don't think everybody admits to it, but I think everybody does it. Because
I think a lot of the how is because when we go through school as a kid, you know, and growing up, there's always a reason for everything. Well, this is how this has happened. This is why this. So we're used to that way of thinking, like, knowing why and how something's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we learn about love attraction and we're like, oh, no, our concern is not to know how it's going to happen. A lot of times the brain is like, what? Like, what are you talking about? We're used to knowing and trying to figure out how something's going to happen. Isn't that how we're supposed to do it with everything?
Yeah, like, I'd say that's true. But I think it also goes deeper than that because a lot of what goes on in our lives, a lot of the things that we end up choosing, even though we don't realize we're choosing them, are things that are what I would call fear-based or mm-hmm. things that are based mm-hmm. in negative emotions. We talked about video games. You know, so much of them are about violence or about negative situations. Most entertainment is about negative situations.
That is true. Most news and entertainment, even the Weather Channel, everything
even the weather
fear-based,
channel.
Negative.
That's so weird. I mean, there are actually the weathermen, weather people, who will tell you that the weather presenters go out of their way to make weather events more dramatic than they really are because they want to retain listeners.
Crazy. Oh, I know. Sometimes it's like it's raining outside, and then after you listen to the weather report, they make it seem like everyone has to like rush home and lock the doors and go to the basement.
That's right. Yeah.
It's just raining. That's all it is.
Raining. It will. This too will pass.
No reason to panic. It's just raining. It's fine.
But it's true though, because we have so many things in society that train us to be afraid. So of course, what's our orientation going to be whenever we start thinking about something wonderful and fanciful?
Yeah.
We've been trained to be afraid. We've been trained to be scared of stuff. We've been trained to be, say, you know, to be doubtful. So the first thing we do is we become doubtful and scared and feared.
And part of that is, how is that going to happen?
Well, sure, because
what we're not supposed to do.
The moment that you've identified that you're going to be doubtful about something, now you have to explain it.
I forget. Oh, another trap people fall into is with law of attraction stuff is like, don't tell your friends and family, because if they don't know where you're coming from and they don't resonate with the law of attraction, they're going to totally cut you down about whatever it is you want to manifest.
I don't know about you. I didn't have to have that kind of admonition. I kept it to myself anyway. It took me a long time to even bring it up. I didn't have to have somebody saying, don't do that. It's kind of like having a burner on the stove, you know, and the burner's up on high. Don't touch the burner. What, you think, am I crazy or something? You know? Of course I'm not going to touch the burner.
A lot of times when people get into the law of attraction, they're excited about it, and they're excited about things they want to manifest, and then they start sharing it with certain family members and friends who don't get it, they totally cut it down. And if the other person's not strong enough, then it starts getting, then that fear and the how and the worry starts coming in their mind.
Oh, yeah.
So I always tell people, be very careful, like, who you share this with, because if they don't get it, they're going to totally not support you in it.
Because really what we're asking for when we share it, when we, you know, explain to people what we've learned, and is we're looking for the feedback that says, wow, you're onto something good.
Yeah.
That's what we really want. We want the reinforcement. And then we don't get the reinforcement, and in some cases we get, what the frick are you talking about?
Yes.
You know?
No, yeah. I mean, I always tell my clients, be very careful who you share this with.
So it will, what you're essentially doing is you're setting yourself up to be undermined. You're setting yourself up to be disappointed and to be doubtful and to start feeling like none of this actually makes any sense and none of it actually works. That's all you're doing when you're trying to convince somebody else of it. So actually, our biggest challenge is not to convince somebody else of it. It's to convince ourselves of it and then to stay there.
Yeah. Iyanla Van Zandt, who I bring up before, she always says, like, just work on your own vision. Like, just let your own personal work be your own blessing. You don't have to share it with everybody, because then you're setting yourself up for that.
Now, that's an interesting concept from The Secret, because The Secret points out that after you've been doing this for a while, and that's the key point, after you've been doing it for a while, people will ask you, well, how do you do this? You know, how do you make all these things happen?
Mm-hmm.
So people will come to you eventually, but it will be only after you have learned to do it regularly and manifest stuff regularly in your own life. So it's not like you have to go out of your way to, you know, evangelize it. That's not necessary, right? They'll come to you. They'll find you.
Yes, but I've noticed, especially in the beginning, when people find out about law of attraction and they're working on keeping their vibration high and they're excited, they share it with the wrong person, and it just has the possibility of just cutting it down, bringing them back down vibrationally. I'm like, no, don't tell anybody.
Oh, it's usually more than possibility. It's usually certainty.
Yeah.
Because, again, the reason why we're putting it out there in the first place, we're looking for reinforcement. We're looking for pats on the back, like, yeah, you're onto something there. That's cool mm-hmm. stuff, you know. And when you don't get that, that's when you start losing even more confidence than you'd already lost.
Right, especially in the beginning, because, you know, you're still kind of sorting it out for yourself.
That's right.
You're not quite strong enough yet.
Yeah, you're trying to feel your own way. You're trying to get a sense of, well, do I really believe this? Does this really work? It sounds good, but, you know, it also sounds a little fanciful, so do I really buy into it? That's spatial.
Like, oh, you're just into all that airy-fairy stuff.
Yeah, the airy-fairy stuff, right, yeah.
Then it makes the person feel bad, and then they can start going down the other way. It's like, just don't share it with anyone yet.
Yeah. It was actually a major thing for me when I shared it with my wife early on, and then with my brother and my sister-in-law. And
mm-hmm.
I was actually quite pleased when I got a very positive reaction from them, because I kind of...
That's good.
I built. I spent a long time before I was willing to actually share that. You know, I was really cautious about it.
Very good, yes.
And in my caution, I was feeling out, like, you know, what's the likelihood that they're going to react well to this? You laugh, but it was actually a very serious thing.
No, but I'm saying you were lucky that they were, that they had a good reaction to it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and in fact, my wife ended up doing the very first podcast with me. That's how LOA Today got started. My wife and I did the first podcast on our wedding anniversary. On our wedding anniversary in 2011. Yeah. So
very nice.
Yeah. So it does prove that you can learn this, you can believe it, you can start trying it. You can. It's also good to try it in little ways early on. I don't know about you, but I find that's the safe way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, just trying to attract little things. Like, you know, parking places, that's where a lot of people like to start, trying to attract a parking place where you don't expect a parking place.
Oh, yes.
Those are fun, actually.
Yeah, after a while, you always get the best parking spot.
And the funny thing is that early on, you have to work at it. You know what I mean? At first,
it's new.
And you're changing your thought pattern. You're changing your way of thinking about what you're doing when you're going out shopping or whatever. And you want to get that good parking spot. And at first, you don't get the result, right? And you say to yourself, well, what did I do wrong? And you don't know because there's no guru sitting there saying, well, what you should have done. So you kind of trial and error it. And eventually you start realizing, well, one of the things I realized early on, you have to give the universe a little time. Like if you're 20 seconds away from getting the parking spot or looking for the parking spot, probably not the best time to first ask for it. You're probably better off asking for it about 10 to 15 minutes ago so that you know, the universe can have time to get the cars moved around so that there's a spot open for you. You know, it's not like the physical world instantly shifts, you know, within like a split second. That's not the way life works, does it? You know, things some stuff takes a little time. You have to give it time.
Yes.
Once I learned that, I don't know what your time frame is. I find I need to give it a half an hour. If I can plan a half an hour ahead that I want a parking place, I always get it 100%. If I give myself like 10 to 15 minutes, I'll get it like 80% of the time. If I give myself 20 seconds, yeah, I'm probably out of luck.
I'm a little different in that where I just know I'm going to get a great parking spot, and just in general. So I don't have to kind of ask anymore.
Yeah, I understand what you mean, and I've gotten to that point too. I'm thinking more like what it was like when I first was trying,
for the
first year or two. You know, when I was first experimenting with it, that's what I found to be the rule of thumb, so to speak.
For me, I would just do it like on the way to somewhere. Just when I was in the car on the way, I would just
The point being, you didn't wait till the last second.
Right, that is true. I didn't get to the parking lot.
And expect the car to move out of the way or something. Yeah. Yeah, because it takes a little time to get into that habit of setting up your vibrational level, your emotional set point, before you actually experience the thing that makes you feel good.
Yeah.
That takes practice. It's worth practicing, though.
Yeah.
So anyway,
we have time for one more story. We already out.
We're down to about a minute and a half, so we should probably do a wrap up. Unless you can tell the story in about 20 seconds,
I'll save it for next time.
Okay. Well, tell you what.
But
instead of telling
a good story, so keep on listening next time because it's a really fun
all right. Make a note because we want to hear the whole thing. But one thing you can do: tell people where they can find you in case they want a little help, a little coaching up.
Yeah, if anyone's interested in me or Law of Attraction coaching, they can just go to lifecoachdavid.com and you can find out more about me, and there's even a button there to schedule a first free mini session, or you can just call me or email me and all that information is there.
Excellent. And of course, we want you to continue to listen to LOA Today. We always broadcast every Thursday at 7 p.m. here on PRN. But just in case you aren't always listening on PRN, if you're off someplace else and you don't have access, or you know, you're not connected to the net, you can always listen to our podcast, because the podcast you can subscribe to directly at our website, loatoday.net. And you can also find us on Facebook. We are in the iTunes store. You can find us in YouTube. We're actually in a lot of different places. So, you know, keep following along, because we've got another 21 chapters to go in Asking It Is Given. And David, I can hardly wait for chapter 2.
Yay.
Yay. So Join us again next time. And David, it's been a pleasure as usual.
Same here.
We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.